Hey, I'm Christopher Leon, and welcome to Cut Common's first audio feature. We caught up with British composer Gareth Coker, who has scored some pretty huge games, including Ori and the Blind Forest, and several Minecraft expansion packs. Now he's finished working on the soundtrack for a new game, Ark Survival Evolved, and he tells us how it all got started.
So I started working on the game in May 2015, and then it came out in early access in June 2015. And at the time, I looked at it and I was like, "Oh, this is another independent studio. They're just, you know, it's their first game. They're just getting started. This game looks really crazy. There's a lot going on. There's dinosaurs. There's a science fiction element. I guess there's the Minecraft element in there as well, because you can do a lot of base building in the game." And I was like, wow, they're really putting all of these things together, and they're going to try and make it work into one big game. Little did I know that for the next 2 years, it would basically be the most successful early access game ever, until, of course, PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds. But for a long time, it was always like in the top 10 on Steam most played. I hadn't anticipated like how big it would get. So with that, and with it also being my first early access title, one of the things I wasn't prepared for was having my early versions of the music actually become the music that people really wanted to stay in the game. So when composers write a track, they normally do a digital mock-up or a virtual orchestration, just to give the developer an idea of what it's going to sound like. Now, with the case of early access, all of that is going into the game. That is regardless of whether you're recording with an orchestra or not, which, as you know, we eventually did. So what happens is that the audience gets used to the tracks that you regard as digital mock-ups. And thus, when you change anything, there's actually, I don't want to say it's a backlash, but you're kind of like changing with people's experience. You change anything in a game, like these games with persistent updates, you're always going to get comments from somebody, but I guess I just didn't expect it from the music, and I hadn't really foreseen that. That said, the development process has been pretty smooth as far as I'm concerned. Like, I always knew exactly what I needed to do and when it needed to be done. The recording of the live orchestra, that decision wasn't made until March this year, and that only gave me like 2.5 months to prepare. Because of the reaction, like to the mock-ups. I mean, I put a lot of time into my mock-ups. It's less about getting the most realism. It's about getting the right vibe and emotion. And if you can do that with your digital piece, then you're in a good place. And I was like, well, I don't really want to mess with this. What I'm really looking for is to improve the production quality and aesthetic. And there is a pretty marked difference between, you know, with live orchestra and without live orchestra. But what can sometimes happen, I know this might sound crazy, is that you might not have that same feeling or emotion. There is no guarantee that the exact same feeling or emotion is going to be nailed with the orchestra. But in terms of the music, like in terms of the actual notes, I guess I would just say that the orchestrations were fleshed out. Because when you're writing digitally, you kind of have to write for the software, and that's very, very different to writing for a real orchestra. So once it was confirmed, the nice thing about that is, you know, it's going to be exactly the same number of players playing each time, so you kind of can set up a template and a format, and once you've orchestrated one or two, it gets easier to orchestrate the rest. And there's about 135 minutes of music recorded, 74 of which are on the soundtrack. And almost, I'd say, like 85% of that is combat music, so it's really like full on the whole time. So it's a lot of work, but there was a consistency to it. So I wouldn't say the music changed, just the goal was to like maximize the production value. Well, I think when I was pitching the idea to the development team, Studio Wildcard, about recording with an orchestra, I was like, you know, this is Ark, and it's gotten so big now, and you've got all these crazy creatures, and you've got this science fiction element, which is super prevalent in the end of the game. And I was like, you know, you guys really should go big or go home, but obviously, you know, you've got to work with whatever budget is given. So they just had me put together some quotes, and they went with the biggest orchestra in one of the best rooms in the world. So I was like, okay, I'd better not screw this up. And I remember like on day one, it's 9:58 a.m. and recording starts at 10, and I'm standing in front of the orchestra, and I think for the first time in my life I had imposter syndrome, because I was like, I'm probably the least experienced person here. I am the person that like made this happen, I guess, but every player here has been playing their instrument probably since they were three. In Abbey Road, like, this is the room which recorded Lord of the Rings, Star Wars, Harry Potter, and the list is just endless. My engineer is Simon Rhodes, and he worked with James Horner for several years, including, you know, he recorded Avatar. So he knows what he's doing. And I'm like, wow, here I am, and it was just a very surreal moment. Of course, I caught myself and pulled myself together and then introduced myself to the orchestra, and everything was fine. But it was just that brief moment. It's like, what am I doing here? Almost, do I deserve to be here? Because, you know, 6-7 years ago, I was a student. So and I think I actually said that to the orchestra, like, the last time I recorded in London, I was a student. So it was a little bit different this time around. But once we started and I heard take one, it only took like 10 seconds for me to be like, yep, this was the right decision. It's the right sound. It is a really, really large group. The main reason for the large group is because we had so much brass. I think 18 brass players, which is just a very beefy section. If I can remember, it's 4 trumpets, 6 horns, 1 tenor trombone, 2 bass trombones, 1 contrabass trombone, which is the most awesome instrument ever, 1 cimbasso, and 1 tuba. So to balance that out, you need a lot of strings. And so we had 60 strings instead of the standard for usually is like 50. And then we had triple woodwind. So it's 3 flutes, 3 oboes, 3 clarinets, 3 bassoons, and then piano, of course, and some percussion. It was a pretty beefy orchestra. But the great thing about Abbey Road Studio One is there still felt like there was space. I felt like I could have fit another 50 people in there, and there'd have still been. Yeah, I'm serious. It's such a massive cavernous room. But it does have like quite a long reverb, but like it's not so long that everything sounds wet and muddy. So there's like a strain. It's difficult to describe, but there's like a tightness to the room that is really, it's really quite good for like this kind of score, which is very action heavy, and it's got a lot of fast playing in it. Anything would sound good in there, but I think Abbey Road particularly excels with this kind of music. So that's a little bit of insight into what that was like. Yeah, I hope I get to do it again, but even if I don't, I've done it once. And I think it's probably on every composer's bucket list to record in that room at least once. I'd love to do it again, but obviously there's so many things that go into the decision where to record, namely budget. But often the room just isn't available because the A-list film composers are booking it out like all year. It's funny, when we booked the orchestra, the date was like literally, there was like 4 days where the studio was available and the orchestra was available, and it happened to be the ones that fit with our schedule. I guess it was just meant to be, but they said it doesn't really happen very often. Like, it was block booked. I booked this in March, and it was block booked basically until October. And I don't know how any game project can plan like 6 to 7 months out, especially an independent one. So we did get really lucky. Again, it depends on the game, but I like to be on as early as possible because it allows me to kind of live with the game. I think with films, because they're linear, you can watch the edit once and you kind of get the idea. Like, you should know what the story is and you should know how it's going to play out because it's going to be the same every single time. But with games, the pacing is so stretched, or it can be condensed if you're really good at playing a game. So my approach to scoring is to understand the gameplay mechanics and the pace of the gameplay. So even if there's no art or no visuals, because obviously that informs my choices as well, but the first thing, I think the most important thing for me to decide when I'm writing a game track is actually the tempo, because it's got to kind of match the feel of the gameplay. That's like most of the action music in Ark is between, probably between 124 and 138, which is also kind of a dance music speed, because Ark is very tribal, and so I wanted to like have that tribal element in the music. I'm sure you could find exceptions in some of the tracks, but I think like most of them are between that tempo, because it just felt right. I'd look at footage of the game, and I'd look at some of the fighting, and I'd write a piece of music, and then the great thing about doing things digitally is you can write a whole track, and then you can just change the tempo, and everything's automatically slower or faster. So it's actually quite easy to try stuff out. And there's been a lot of times when I finished a track, and I'm just like, well, what if this was 5 beats per minute slower or 5 beats per minute quicker? And it really can make all the difference, or it can change the way you look at a composition and how it goes to picture. So yeah, the first thing I look at is the gameplay, and then the second, the visuals usually come in a little bit later. Not always, but that's generally how it works. And once the visuals start to come in, that like informs instrument choices and how I'm going to orchestrate. Am I going to use anything weird? Like, for example, when you're in the mountains in Ark, I use a lot of ethnic woodwinds, like floaty sounds, because you're high up. When you're in the ocean, I'm using a lot of bell sounds, because to me, like, bells and underwater seems to work very well. But other people may disagree. That's just my approach. It worked for Thomas Newman in Finding Nemo. So, right, exactly. Those two core things. What is the speed of the gameplay? And obviously that can change. But generally speaking, I think most games have like, I don't want to say cruise control, but like they have like the speed at which you can build everything around. Obviously you need to ramp it up and ramp it down sometimes, but there's like a baseline, which, usually works well for most of the game. The visuals. I mean, I think for this, comparing Ark and Ori is kind of fun because they are very different games, but I did like my compositional style. There are some common threads between them. For example, like one of the things I learned worked really well in Ori was to, if you have a theme and people like it, then you should use it again. Because people, you've got to find the balance of like using it too much, but you've got to at least like signal it in various places. And it's something that Jerry Goldsmith did as well. You know, there's a quote by Jerry Goldsmith where he says, "If in doubt, play the tune." And it's amazing how often, you've got to have a good tune in the first place. But it's amazing how often that can like solve problems or get you through another 20 to 30 seconds of writing. So that's like one of the common threads. How I think obviously the main difference is just the sheer size. First of all, the score there's just more music in Ark. And second, the forces are obviously bigger. I think that the main difference between the two soundtracks is that there is a ton of percussion in Ark. In Ori, there's hardly any percussion, because when we did that game, the way it worked was that the sound effects were basically the percussion track. So it's why the game feels quite coherent between the music and sound, is because there's a lot of punchy sound effects, and because they're acting as the percussion section and the music is generally quite smooth, it adds... The sound effects like help the music feel more dynamic, even though the music kind of has this like long flowing thing throughout. Ark, on the other hand, it's kind of in your face, and the music kind of needs to make the impression that it's like almost overpowering you, and that's to signal to the player that. Whenever the player's in combat in Ark, like that's really bad, basically, because most situations in Ark are pretty dangerous, or they can become pretty dangerous pretty quickly. And if you're playing online, you can lose everything pretty quickly. So that's where the tension like really needs to be dialed up. And again, the other thing is it's a pretty epic game. There's like, I mean, it's a game where you can literally have an army of T-Rexes. So you've got to like allow for that scope. And it's totally unrealistic, but that's where the fun comes in. The core things I wanted to have, I wanted it to be fun to listen to. And I wanted it to feel tribal because of the tribal element in the game and, like, the community aspect of the game. Like, Ark's a lot easier to play if you're playing with your friends. Or just playing with another group of people. You can play it by yourself, but it's going to take you a really long time. And then, yeah, just marrying that with the large orchestral forces. And I think the only other thing with a project of this scope and the amount of orchestration and music preparation that needed to be done for the recording, just how to organize something this large. See, I'm still flying solo. I have people that help me, obviously, but, like, I'm not like Hans Zimmer or, you know, one of the, like, the other A-list composers. I don't have any interns. I don't have a massive team. And having done Ark now, I totally understand why these composers have massive teams, because it's just physically impossible to do everything yourself. I orchestrated all of the core soundtrack for Ark, but there's expansions as well, and, like, I just didn't have enough time. Because it's just a lot of effort to put all the notes into the notation software. So it was just like learning how to get organized on a very large scale project. And of course, now that I know how to do it myself, I can, one, employ other people to do it if I have that very good problem in the future of working on a project this large. But two, I also know how long things take, so I can budget for it accordingly in future. But yeah, I think it's maybe not the most glamorous thing to talk about it, because I think most people think of composers when we write the music, we just, like, write the music and hand it off to the orchestra and it's done. I wish it were that simple, because there is an insane amount of work that goes into it. One of the cool things, like, I was able to take my parents to the recording, because they know what I do, but they don't really know what I do. And my father, towards the end of his career, worked in logistics, and him just seeing, like, the amount of stuff that goes on at a recording session, like the amount of activity, the amount of cables, the amount of microphones, just like, and, you know, he said to me, he was like, did you organize all of this? I'm like, well, I guess technically I did, but I really had nothing to do with what is going on in the studio right now, other than they're going to play my music. But, you know, then my dad was like, yeah, well, you still have to make the phone call. I was like, yeah, okay, I guess you're right. But yeah, just the logistical side of the recording, that there is so much that's going on before it gets listened to in a compressed format on Spotify through someone's $10 earphones. Sorry, I had to put that little bit of cynical commentary at the end. With the game design process, it really depends on the game. With Ori, I was pretty heavily involved in giving feedback on pacing and flow. With Ark, like, what is the pacing? It's scripted by the community, so there's not really much feedback I can give there. So I think for single-player narrative games, I actually think it's essential for the composer to play the game, or the composer should have someone in the audio team that is really in tune what is going on with the game. Because, you know, not every composer can make the time, or, just to be honest, maybe some composers just aren't very good at playing games. I happen to be quite good at playing games, so it's not a problem for me, and I enjoy doing it. It's a good way to have downtime. So yeah, for Ori, like, I had a lot of input on pace and flow, and, like, how one scene flows into another, like, and especially on cutscenes as well. Like, one of the cool things about how we did the cutscenes in Ori is I would write to the storyboards, and then they would animate to the music that I'd written, instead of just, yes. So I could write something that felt good musically, and then they would animate to it. Obviously, it, like, had to be roughly to the length of the storyboards, but, like, I could tweak the lengths of the storyboards myself, because it's just a clip at the end of the day. It was a really nice way of working. I'm aware it's very uncommon, I'll take what I can get. If it had to be the other way around, where I'm just scoring to picture and to what I'm given, it would be no problem too. But yeah, for Ori, it kind of allowed me the opportunity to set the pace of each scene, which was pretty cool. And as for your bigger picture question, I've been gaming since I was four. So there was a computer in Britain called the ZX Spectrum. I don't know if you know that, but, like, it's a really old computer. You kind of had to type in everything yourself unless you had the cassette player. So I learned pretty basic programming just by, my father would buy me books, like, here's Space Invaders, but you have to type it all up. Which was great. So, you know, you're typing in the graphics for the each Space Invader, and it's all in binary code. That was my initial gaming experiences. And then obviously the PC came to fore. Some of my favorite games, I'll just list a couple. I'm a big fan of the old Star Wars simulator games, so X-Wing and TIE Fighter. Basically all the old LucasArts games, Day of the Tentacle, Full Throttle, they're all incredible. Deus Ex, the original game, is probably my favorite game of all time. Because I think now when I look back at it, I'm like, how did they fit all of that onto one CD? Given how much dialogue there is, and it's recorded dialogue. It's very compressed. You can hear how compressed it is, but it's all there. And it's just a huge, it's just a really huge world considering when it was released and the amount of choice that you have. It was, for me, pretty revolutionary thing at the time. And also, it came out at the same time as The Matrix, which was very good timing to release that game, because it was the cyberpunk peak. And then recently, I have to be honest, I loved every second of The Witcher 3. It was the one game I, committed to last year. You can only commit to so many open-world games, because they will take forever. But I was like, I'm going to play The Witcher 3. I waited for, all of the expansions to come out, and then I just kind of blitzed it all in one big go. So I have played everything. I have finished as much as I have found. I'm pretty sure I covered most of the map, and I did all of the expansion packs. I had a great time. I'm done with The Witcher, but I had a great time. I had a great time playing it. So I was in Japan for 3 years, which is not a short length of time. So after I graduated from the Royal Academy of Music, I basically came to the conclusion that I probably wasn't ready for a music career yet, because no one's going to hire anyone at the age of 22. I thought, I need to earn money, and I don't think I'm going to earn much money writing music right now. And I also think, I'll be honest, I think I needed to figure out if I really wanted to do it. And so it was one of those late night searches in year four of my undergraduate degree, how to make money as a graduate with a music degree. And eventually I stumbled on the JET program website, the Japan Exchange and Teaching Program. And I was like, wait, all I need is a degree for this and to be able to speak English? I'm definitely qualified. I basically took it as the opportunity. One, this is the best chance I might ever have to travel extensively. Two, I'm going to get real working experience. Okay, it might not be in music, but it's going to be real life, basically. And if there's one thing I've been telling composers, I get asked a lot of things now, what are your influences? What's your process? What helps you write music? And I'll be honest, and I'll be like, it's the fact I've been to a lot of countries. I've lived in a lot of places. I'm from England originally, and I've lived in Holland, America, East Coast America, West Coast America, and Japan. And of course, while I was in Japan, I was able to not just see a lot of Japan, but also it's a lot cheaper to travel to the rest of Asia when you're flying from Japan as opposed to flying from Europe. So it was just a lot more practical to get around. Then there's the added experience of I'm standing in front of a class of 40 people who don't really know me. Does that sound familiar? It's basically like standing in front of an orchestra. And people who hear that from me, they're like, but well, you were teaching English, it's different. I'm like, no, it's not. It's a communication thing. And my job literally is to teach communication. So I'd better do a good job of it myself. It's a bunch of those little things that you pick up, from your work. And then, of course, just being around a country's culture for 3 years, even if you don't seek it out, just by the process of osmosis, just by being there for a long time, you're going to be influenced by Japanese music and Chinese music and Korean music. And you're going to understand, most people, when they think of Japanese music, if you played them a Chinese music track, they would say it's Japanese. But there is once you're there long enough, you can start to learn the difference between a Japanese and a Chinese and a Korean music track. How they're constructed differently, the scales they use, the instruments. It's not intentionally that I was like looking to get Asian influence in my music. It's more that I was just like looking to expand my horizons. And I'm sure that stuff has carried over into my music now, but I couldn't tell you anything specifically because I wasn't consciously seeking it out. But it's more like one of those things, hey, there's a concert in this old temple tonight. Let's go to that. It's one of those, that's the great thing about being in a country. You can make like decisions like that on a daily basis. Whereas if I want to go see a Japanese music concert here, it's in Los Angeles, it's going to be available, but I have to seek it out. Whereas in Japan, I didn't have to seek anything out. Might sound like I'm really lazy, but that's not really the point. It's like, it's more like just when you're surrounded by new stuff, your brain automatically is going to account for it. So yeah, the thing that I'm telling like other composers, like, okay, you might not be able to go to Japan, but where do you want to go? Like, you know, because you only need one little thing to spark off like a whole new creative wave. Now I didn't do LSD like Steve Jobs did in India, but Steve Jobs said that like going to India was a really big important part of his life. And I can totally understand why. It's just, I think getting out of your comfort zone basically is the thing that can really help any artist create. And I chose to do that at the age of 22, but with the long-term goal of always coming to USC, University of Southern California, which is a film and game music program, and then graduate from that and hopefully end up in the industry, which is exactly what's happened. And my experience in Japan like put me on a good founding like on how to handle myself professionally, which if I'd gone straight to USC at the age of 22, it would have just been more academia and no real life, because being in university is not real life. So I'm glad I got my real life experience, and I got just happened to get it in a foreign country. The old traditional Japanese arts, it's something like, I would say it's an acquired taste, but then other people might go and they might love it. So it's an acquired taste for me. My attitude, like, if someone asked me to like write Japanese music, I would probably do my own spin on it, and I probably wouldn't like make it completely Japanese because it would still sound inauthentic because I'm not a Japanese person. I had the same like dilemma when I was doing the soundtrack for Minecraft Chinese Mythology. So Chinese Mythology is a reskin of Minecraft, just done in a Chinese style. I was like, okay, how authentic do I go here? You know, I would say it's like 66% authentic and then 33% Hollywood, basically. And it's just because even if I like became incredibly academic and learned about Chinese or Japanese music, I'd still not have grown up in a society to truly appreciate it and understand it. it's a lot of responsibility is what it is. Like, so, the idea had been floated around for a while. Ori is the kind of game, you know, it's known for its art and it's known for its audiovisual experience. It's known for good gameplay as well, but like it's when you see Ori for the first time, the visuals take you aback, and hopefully the music does too. And I think the idea had been toyed around with for the first trailer for Ori and the Blind Forest 3 years ago. But it never kind of materialized. You know, there's all kinds of reasons why these things never happen, which I won't go into. But anyway, this year was kind of like, it worked well for them in terms of like how they'd set up the show. And also having just a piano on stage was like probably the least risky thing, because these E3 things, and with the gaming community being as savage as they can be, you know, if one thing goes wrong, like you're on the internet forever. I mean, I'm on the internet forever anyway, because it went well, but like, I think you know where I'm coming from. Yeah, the idea was suggested. I've been playing the piano since I was a kid, so like that the issue of being on stage was not a problem, except the fact that I hadn't been on stage for like 10 years, because obviously being a composer, I'm not really performing much anymore. I probably should be performing more than I am, but yeah, I just hadn't performed for a long time. The decision, I think it was just Microsoft really likes the Ori franchise and kind of wanted to put it front and center and give it a special treatment. So we're pretty grateful that Microsoft feel that way about Ori. But I wasn't nervous. We had plenty of rehearsals. The only time I got nervous is so the way the stage was set up was I was already seated. But the stage rotates on during the previous segment of the show. So like the piano rotates 180 degrees from off stage to on stage. And that rotation felt like an eternity because first of all, the stage is moving, which is a little bit unnerving. But then when I started, like I can't see anyone in the audience. And then like you're gradually rotating on stage and then the audience gradually comes into view and I'm like, okay, do not look at anyone. Like I'm fine with tunnel vision if I don't look at anyone's eyes. As soon as I like lock onto someone's eyes, then I'm finished. But I was like, just don't look at anyone. It's going to be fine. And then when the stage stopped moving, like tunnel vision was activated. Also, I think just before I went on, I think someone told me that there were like 10 million people watching. So that was helpful. It was just a little bit unnerving for that 20 seconds, but then we'd set everything up technically to be pretty much foolproof. So I was just waiting for a click track to start playing, and there were 8 clicks and then off I go. And then everything was synced up with the music and with the video and it went flawlessly. It's something I think finding the right balance, like doing the live music thing is very cool, but like ultimately the reason why it works particularly well in this is because we had a little intro and then the focus went off me and onto the video because ultimately this was a mood piece. And if you break the mood piece by like having a musician on stage and always having the camera on the musician, it's about the musician and it's not about the video. And I think that was like the one thing that everyone at Moon and Microsoft were in sync on. I was like, if we're going to do this, it needs to be, ultimately, the video needs to be front and center. It's not about Gareth being on the piano. It's about, hey, we're announcing Ori and the Will of the Wisps in a cool way. And I think that's exactly what we did. Like we were able to bookend it with me, which was cool because I'm part of the project, but then it really was like focused on Ori for the duration of the video, and I think that was probably the best way to do it. If the game had already been out and we were doing a live performance of the music, then I would be down for like doing it totally differently. But as this was an announcement trailer, like I think this was as much my idea as anything. It's like I was totally fine with like not being in the limelight for like 3 minutes. It was just one of those things. It's like let's introduce Gareth, have him for like 15 seconds, and then cut to the video, and it worked. It ended up working really, really nicely. I hope we do it again, but if not, it was a really cool moment in time, for sure. And yes, you're right. I don't think it's ever been done before. I know Sony had that thing with the whole live orchestra last year. But yeah, I think they did have that. But they kind of did it for everything, it worked in its own way. I think sometimes less is more. But you know, Sony always do a great job with the presentations as well. So it's not like it was bad. It was still really cool to have the composer, because they got Bear McCreary, who's doing God of War 4. It was cool to see him up there conducting the orchestra the year before. So I think Microsoft probably looked at that and were like, yeah, we can't exactly do the orchestra thing, but it also wouldn't have been practical on that stage. Hire an orchestra for like 2 minutes of music? No, it's not going to happen. Getting a piano, and they didn't mess around with piano. They got a good piano. And yeah, I was a bit worried at first. Like, are they going to get like some cheap Casio keyboard? Let's, because then I'm not going to do it. No, they got a proper piano, and yeah, it was they just did it right the whole way through, and it was like having four rehearsals like was handy as well. It just meant we could iron out any kinks. Yeah, it was just really fun to be a part of E3 in that way. And again. Like Abbey Road, if I get to do it again, then great, but I've done it once, so I'm happy. So, obviously I've started work on Ori and the Will of the Wisps, but we don't really have any progress updates on that. I mean, I know what the progress is, but I can't update it publicly. There's an ARC expansion coming out very soon, called Aberration, which is set in a completely different part of the world. And I worked on a VR title called The Unspoken for Insomniac Games, and they're bringing out a story mode basically before the end of the year. So I'm also working on that, and I'm dabbling in a couple more Minecraft things, unannounced Minecraft things, but that's a nice little train to be riding on, because I've done about 3, maybe 4 hours of music for Minecraft now, for all of their little expansions, which they do. You know, there's Greek mythology, Chinese mythology. They've got all these different game modes, battle mode, tumble mode, and glide mode. They all need music. And it's, yeah, they're kind of, I've been really lucky and fortunate to be involved with them for 2.5 years now. So yeah, that's what I'm working on at the moment, and there's some stuff in the horizon for 2018 as well, but that's what's in the immediate future. And yeah, I've got plenty to be working on. Time is tricky. I always find that there's just enough time to get everything done. I never have too much and I never have too little. It's always just enough. I seem to be good at time managing, in that I know exactly how to have 1 minute left over.